While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the reading news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask what's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to everyone joining us from near and far. And thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of insightful conversations and real national dialogue. That is Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radar, news analysis where headlines meet context. It's Monday, the 12th of January, 2026, and the time is exactly 3 minutes past the hour of past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, across the country today, alarm clocks rang earlier, school uniforms were dusted off, lunchboxes packed, and school gates once again filled with eager and anxious young faces. Now, today marks the official return to school, a moment that signals more than the end of the holidays. It marks a return to structure, responsibility, and renewed national focus. As learners step back into classrooms, parents and guardians resume daily routines shaped by transport costs, school fees, safety concerns, and the hope that this academic year will bring opportunity and progress. Now, for teachers and school administrators, today brings another chapter of shaping young minds, often under challenging conditions, but with unwavering commitment. The start of the school year also places education firmly back at the center of the national conversation. Questions around preparedness, infrastructure, learner safety and teacher shortages, curriculum relevance and access to quality education, particularly in rural and under-resourced communities, demand attention. Now, early in the year, policy intentions are tested against classroom realities and promises made in boardrooms meet the lived experiences of learners on the ground. Namibia once again finds itself at a critical juncture where investment in education will determine not only academic outcomes, but the country's long-term social and economic future. The decisions taken now by government, school authorities, parents and communities will of course shape the generation that carries the nation forward. Right here on The Reader, we go beyond the headlines, we unpack the implications, examine the gaps and ask the questions that matter most to ordinary Namibians, from urban centers to the most remote villages. In a period of transition and renewed expectations, we remain committed to informed analysis, credible voices and meaningful dialogue. From airing Monday through Friday from 1300 hours to 1430, On The Radar News Analysis brings you expert insight, lived experiences, and thoughtful journalism that doesn't just inform but empowers. Now, this program will, of course, focus also on back-to-school realities, learner safety, parental responsibility, and what this new academic year could mean for Namibia's education system. You can listen in on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live on the Eagle FM app, and stay engaged through our WhatsApp channel for updates, discussions, and audience polls. So wherever you are, in traffic, at work, or at home, stay with us. This is where Namibia pauses, reflects, and plans its future. Because right here on The Radar, the truth is never out of reach. Let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Now let's jump straight into these top stories. GIPF launches pension-backed home loan scheme. Now, the Government Institution Pension Fund has officially announced the commencement of its long-awaited pension-backed home loan scheme, which will take effect starting today, Monday, the 12th of January, 2025. Pardon me? The Government Institution Pension Fund, GIPF, has officially announced the commencement of its long-awaited pension-backed home loan scheme, which will take effect starting today, Monday, the 12th of January, 2025. The scheme will be administered by First Capital Treasury Solutions, that is FCTS, and Kuleni Financial Services, PTY LTD, and GIPF has cautioned members not to submit applications at GIPF offices, as the fund will not process applications directly. Members who wish to apply through the Kuleni Financial Services may obtain and submit application forms through their respective human resource offices or via the Kuleni Financial Services website. Applications must be accompanied by required documentation, including a GIPF benefit statement, a certified copy of the member's identity document, a recent payslip, proof of property ownership or allocation, and assigned quotations where applicable. For members applying through First Capital Treasury Solutions, application forms can be accessed at FCTS offices in Windhoek, of course, and other places as well. Now, GIPF further advises members to access their benefit statement through the GIPF member portal to ensure that qualifying amounts reflect their most recent income details. As at present, the scheme is only available apparently to active GIPF members, meaning employees currently working for the government of the Republic of Namibia and contributing monthly to the fund, as well as members on disability. Now, other participating employees, including state-owned enterprises and mission hospitals, will be included at a later stage, according to them, once the necessary agreements have been finalized. And according to GIPF, the pension-backed home scheme will allow members to use up to 33.3% of their pension savings as collateral to purchase surface land, buy a new home, build a home, or improve an existing property in both urban and rural areas. Now, the scheme also allows members to transfer existing home loans from commercial banks or other financial institutions. However, the fund has emphasized that the loan cannot be used to consolidate non-housing debt or to purchase movable items such as household appliances, vehicles, livestock, or other non-immovable assets. In line with the pension fund regulations, loans under the scheme will attract a variable interest rate accumulating at the prevailing repo rate plus a 2.5% rate as well on top of the other one. With the current repo rate at 6.5%, the interest rate stands at 9.0%. And members are told or informed to note that loan installments may increase or decrease depending on changes to the repo rate by the Bank of Namibia. Let's do some math. For instance, if perhaps the loan scheme that one is borrowing is their pension money is 1,000. Let's say, for instance, times that by 9%, then they will have to pay back $1,090 when they are gonna pay back. Since it's at 9%. But nonetheless, let's listen to GIPF, corporate communications, and we're back to speak to an economist also on what to explain to us on how this will be beneficial. Now, this is Ms. Katrina Padami Sikeleni, manager and stakeholder engagement at GIPF.
We're extremely excited to announce the commencement of the much-anticipated GIPF pension-backed home loan scheme. And this will commence on Monday, the 12th of January, 2026. And the scheme will be administered by two administrators, namely First Capital Treasury Solutions and Kuleni Financial Services. So we're really urging our members to contact the two entities directly for information on the processes, documentation required. And we really just want to also inform members that the scheme is currently only available to active members of the GIPF. And these are defined as members who are currently employed by the government of the Republic of Namibia and that are contributing monthly towards their pension. It's also available for members on disability, and we just want to inform our other participating employers of the GIPF, such as the state-owned entities that are part of the fund and mission hospitals. We would like to advise you, please, that the scheme will become available in due course. The fund is in the process of finalizing the necessary agreements with the said employers.
And with that, let's pause here now. We'll be back to continue with an economist voice on this particular matter.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Of course, we are discussing the home loan backed scheme that is by GIPF. Home loaned, pension backed home loan scheme. Let's get it right. And joining me in studio now telephonically is Lucas Kumunika, an economist. A very good afternoon to you, Lucas, and compliments for the new year, as this, I believe, is the first time we're actually engaging you in this 2026.
Yes, good afternoon. A compliment for the season two.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to engage here.
Yeah. Lucas, I think we're starting off on slightly good news. I want to say slightly because the percentage is not something that makes me smile. Not specifically because I'm a government employee, but we do have friends and family who we could also benefit from the pension back home loan scheme. So yeah, we're definitely discussing the pension backed home loan scheme from GIPF. For an economist perspective, Lucas, as you read this news, what comes to your mind? What benefits can we expect this to bring to Namibia in general and to our economy?
Okay, thank you so much. I think in terms of the benefits that will accrue from this as a result of this initiative, I think it's a two is from both I mean two perspectives. The first one is from a perspective, household perspective or individual who are then the employees or the beneficiary of this initiative. And then from the second second aspect is the point of view of course the economy in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in general, the initiative is kind of a release from the house, those who benefit in terms when they are buying houses. But of course, the magnitude is a discussion of another day. But the first benefit that is accrued to individual or household or those who are going to benefit from this through purchasing of houses is the cheap borrowing in when they want to borrow to buy houses. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the market interest rate, of course, it's something that the difference might be minimal, but as time goes, because this is a loan that you take for 20 years or more in some cases, or maximum of 20 years. So it will make a difference, because if you check the repo rate, it will be, I mean, the interest will then be the repo rate plus the 2.6%. Of course, the current one will be 9 point something.
9.0. Because current repo rate is 6.5 and they say 2.5.
Yes, but if you compare that to the what you will get, the lending rate that you will get from commercial bank, normal commercial bank, it will be higher, because it will be around 11 point something or more.
Mm.
So basically that will be a relief from the point of view of those the home buyers or who are affected by this initiative.
Yeah.
But of course also we don't know the magnitude of the lenders that are affected by this initiative. But if these are a lot of people, of course the commercial bank also might get pressure to get pressure to also reduce a little bit their margin, and this will further even be a benefit to the individual, because if it will tighten competition a little bit, because these people will also be given an option to move their loans from those specific banks to the current scheme. So if that happens, if they are losing a lot of clients because of that effect to the administrators who are going to be responsible for this scheme, then it's likely that they will respond by also them reducing their margin. But of course, moving on to the second perspective, the perspective of the economy in general, the most critical one is that there will be a spillover to other sectors, because you know, buying a house also comes with other responsibility, because if you have, for example, to buy a house, you need to also, it means that if people are owning houses, it means that they also need to buy furniture and all other things that they need in that houses. So you expect also this also to have a spillover in the wholesale retail and wholesale sector.
Yeah.
So and also you also have the performance of this utility sector, which is water and electricity, is also likely to increase. Yeah, but on the other end, maybe the negative thing is that it is also to question ourselves, but in terms of the service providers, such as the local authorities, are they ready to address the demand which is likely to, because if there are new houses that need to be constructed, or you have a development of new suburb that needs to be done, it means that there is also a demand from a local authority point of view to provide services to those areas. So the readiness and the capacity of the local authorities in terms of the provision of services also is something that is questionable. And if the local authorities are not ready, this effect is likely to have a negative effect in that regard. Yeah, but also maybe the possible effect also is from the government perspective. You see, if maybe this but it depends on their reaction or the responsiveness of the homeowners, their perspective. If there is a link between also buying a house and owning starting a family. So if the homeowners start to have, if people have a perspective that if I buy a house, I need to buy a house first before I start a family, then once they buy a house, it means that they will be encouraged to start family, and that somehow increase pressure to the government in terms of the provision of services like school and so forth. But also maybe the thing that the most, one of the most important things also in terms of the effect, is also, this effect may be negative also, depending on the demand, because this scheme is kind of a stimulant, from the demand side of housing. But if there are no equal stimulants, which would stimulate the construction of houses, then it will ensure that there is no deficit in terms of the supply of houses or shortage in the market. Then it will be a negative, there will be a negative effect, because that demand is likely to increase the price of houses. If the demand will then, which is, we already have a deadlock. So this will stimulate another kind of additional demand. So if there is no stimulant or additional or exacerbated kind of, accelerated kind of, increase in terms of the supply, then this will force prices to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And once it forces prices to go up, then it also likely to bring another pressure to the consumer.
Yeah.
So it's just to caution that as much as we stimulate such stimulants in terms of demand, should also be accompanied by other initiatives which will stimulate the supply, so that we don't find ourselves in a situation whereby there is a high shortage of houses,
mm-hmm.
which will then which will push prices up.
Mm, I see. Now, JIPF has stated that a 33.33% pension credit limit was determined based on actual recommendation to safeguard the long-term sustainability of the fund, of which I honestly feel like it's not really much. I don't know. Or perhaps, let's say, for instance, how much is 33% of 1 million? You're an economist. I think you can count that in your head. I know. Or let's say perhaps of 330,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not much, because houses don't cost 330,000 right here in Namibia. You know? That then
yeah.
I feel as if it's
in terms of effect, it's something because if you look at that benefit, the special also case that came with this scheme is that people are also, the fund is accrued in terms of the financing of building houses in both proclaimed and unproclaimed area.
Okay.
And that will have a benefit. So I can just imagine that if I need to build my house in the village and you give me the 300,000, I will construct a better
decent house. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because as opposed to the system whereby the loan is only extended to those that are buying houses in proclaimed area, and then and also when you look at the kind of standard regulations and stuff, it's expensive to construct houses in proclaimed area because of now those services that are extended, addition that comes with that houses. But so the effect is really that even those that were not able to access this kind of funding for them to fund their houses in unproclaimed or communal areas, they will be able to do it, and that would be much of the effect. But what also, it's also very critical that such things like pension fund are quite critical in terms of maintaining the financial stability in general at a macro level. Because should it be that a high portion is to be released, then it's likely to cause problem in terms of the liquidity. Because remember, when you have a pension fund, then what then happens is the pension fund manager, which is now then GIPF, assess to say,
yeah,
okay, by this time, this person is going to retire. So that means they will make an investment that so they have enough time to invest in long-term investment as opposed to short-term investment. And that will also increase, you know, their fund, and it will also protect their liquidity in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if a large portion is accessed, remember this is something that will be now accessed in a short term as opposed to the long term.
Yeah.
So if it's a large portion of the fund is accessed in a short term, then it's likely to bring the problem of liquidity. So you might find out that the fund does not have then enough time to make investment, long-term investment,
mm-hmm,
where they are able to to reap more benefits in terms of the return, so that they are able to even pay out more. So if a large portion is accessed, then it's likely to cause also the financial instability and soundness, to affect the soundness of the financial system of the country, and it might lead into then a financial crisis and affect the liquidity of the economy in general.
Mm.
So I think 33% is quite reasonable,
okay,
given that it's from zero. This is a new initiative, so it is a reasonable amount, balancing the benefit that is accrued to those who contribute their money there, and also to the economy, so that we are able, because also if you the more the more money you are taking from the system, now you have also limited, because remember this fund is used also, this is the same fund that is borrowed by businesses for them also to expand, other than just those that are in the housing sector. So also, if the percentage is that much, it means that you are also reducing money that is available to be borrowed and invested in other kind of things, like maybe if there is a business, somebody that want to construct, for example, a mall, or they want to do a certain kind of project. So if the percentage is not well calculated, it may lead into kind of financial crisis in a way.
Quite interesting. Okay. So what would you say perhaps those to benefit from this should be cautious of, or would you say they should definitely go out and benefit from this? Or perhaps there's something that they could also be maybe cautious about in terms of getting this loan. But then the good thing is that it's their loan, you know, but it's from their pension. So I guess that makes it quite reasonable in that aspect.
Yeah. Maybe something, if I have to give something that they have to be cautious of, maybe it's a general one, but anyway, because it depends from situation to situation, because you need, when you are borrowing, you need to also assess different things. Despite the fact that the person who will borrow I mean, the institution where you will borrow from, they will, of course, assess your affordability. But it's also quite critical and important that the person who is going to borrow also assess their situation. For example, if a certain person is already renting, which is going from 6,000 upwards, so it makes much sense for them to borrow and buy their house, because then at least their house in 20 years, it will become your house after you are done paying. But if you are renting, then of course it will never be your property. Mm-hmm. But if maybe one do the calculation and say that maybe they are not able to, or they need to do other things before they take a loan to buy a house, of course it happens. Because if you also look at a commitment, for example, for a house, this is a long-term commitment, 20 years or more if you are young. So you also need to assess your situation to say, which one do I need to, maybe there are things that you need to do first, maybe you need to buy a car first, so that, because a car, remember, a car is maybe a 5 years commitment or 2 years commitment or so.
Mm-hmm.
So then you provide the room for you to finish with one thing and do the other. But it depends on really, it really depends on the situation of the person that would take a decision to borrow. Mm-hmm. But of course, the institution will do their own assessment. But of course, there is also information asymmetry. That's why it's also critical that also you be honest to yourself, because there are certain information or there are certain things that one spend on, mm-hmm. or there are certain responsibility that we have, of course, that the institution that is doing the assessment may not be able to see. And also just to also caution that at least when the borrowers are being assessed, they should also give the true information about their spending habits, so that it doesn't
do more harm than good.
And then they will get a loan which does not really correspond to their affordability in
real life. Okay. Lastly, Lucas, the fund also has emphasized that the loan cannot be used to consolidate non-housing debt or to purchase movable items such as household appliances, vehicles, stock, or other non-immovable assets. What's your say on this? Is that perhaps a wise move, or perhaps not so wise from an economics perspective? Because I don't want to use my own opinion here, but I know you have a bigger picture. So what's your take on that?
From my point of view, because there are different school of thought, but from the school of thought of economics where I'm coming from, I think it's a wise move. It's a wise move in a sense that from the school of thought where I'm coming from, the school of thought that I associate myself with. So buying a property is quite of an asset as opposed to a car, and also the risk to other things. And also the risk that I exposed to, you know, the risk that I exposed to assets like maybe cars, furniture and stuff. So, and also one thing is that the house appreciates in value. So if you buy a house today for maybe 800,000, and maybe just 5 years, you might find out that the value is accumulated with certain amount, and the more improvement due to it, the more like the value will go up. So for me, this is a wise move, because at least it's an investment in an asset that appreciate in value as opposed to those that depreciate.
Interesting. Okay. Lucas Kumanika, thank you so much. I believe you really broke it down for us, making it clearer. And I do appreciate making your time, for you making taking time out of your busy schedule to come and explain this to us. I appreciate you. Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you, and you're welcome.
Okay. And then we had it from economist Lucas Kumanika, and he was explaining the recently, actually, the pension backed home loan scheme that takes effect today. That is Monday, the 12th of January, 2026. Of course, let's pause here right now and we'll be back shortly after the commercial break. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And welcome back. Of course, this is On The Radar News Analysis. Joining us in studio now again, telephonically, is of course Mr. Hofni Ipinge, Oshana Governor. A very good afternoon to you, Governor, and welcome to On The Radar News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Governor, it's of course back to school today. This Monday, school has officially reopened after such a long holiday, not just any holiday, the biggest holiday and the time where a lot of family came together. Just how would you say Oshana is taking the concept of back to school at this particular time today?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Oshana, it's a great region with very big responsibilities. And when it's come to back to school, we observe number of learners going back to school happier. And I'm happy that what I have subsidized because we received a very high rainfall during the month of December, just immediately before the Christmas and New Year Eve. And as we speak now, the soil has become dry again because it's a little bit or let me say the weather has changed, and there is no much problems of our learners going back to schools in the situation of maybe flow of water here and there. So the water has subsidized and most of the closing points are open. So we can see a lot of learners going back to school with their own school uniform. I know it's always a challenge at the beginning of the year with, the placement of learners in different grades, especially in the lower grades, so which is grade 1 up to grade 4, and also in grade 8, especially grade 8, some of the learners, they move from different regions who also want to come to Oshana regions with reasons maybe their parents are no longer living there. Now the parents have to come with their kids here and they want to start a new schools here. Now you can see there are most of the parents are gathered at schools, looking for schools also for their children in both grades. And I'm happy that I was also in contact with the Director of Education and also the whole committee for admission committee at the regional level, so that they are looking at how they can be able to absorb all the learners in the mainstream. And we know that no learner will be left behind, because education is a right. It's not a want. It's a right. Every learner have to go to school. So we have to make sure that all the learners are placed in the schools nearby, especially those who are in the lower grades. So, and as we speak now, also those learners who could not get admitted today, it was just a first day. So the admission committees is very busy and hard at work to make sure that how many places are available at which at different schools, to make sure that all those learners who are experiencing challenge of when it comes to admissions, they are also being absorbed in the mainstream this week. So it's just a start.
Yeah.
And by Friday, we'll all have the answers that all the learners are absorbed in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
They all get accommodated in the schools within Oshana region. And or the committee that are doing the placement to make sure that all those kids are admitted, they are very busy at work. It's even lunchtime now, and they did not even go for lunch. I was just talking to the Director of Education now. They are very busy making sure that all the learners that couldn't get placement today, so they will be sorted during the course of this week.
Hmm, interesting. That's really good. Are there perhaps some parents who keep coming to your office to look for placement of schools or to find out where they can still place their schools? Is that something also happening?
Yeah, so far I've not experienced anything, in which I'm very, very much happy, because I already established this one before the school has closed, which was last year, that all the complaints, they should all be channeled to the Directorate of Education in Oshana region. There is an admission committee through the Office of the Director of Education. The few that I also got at my office, those one who are looking for the stationaries. And also some of them, I also directed them to the office of the director, because it's the policy and the policy of education. And I've been continuously saying this as a secretary for education, just not now because I'm a governor, but it's covering the whole country, that we don't have a policy, Pella education policy. We don't have a policy that is forcing parents to go and buy stationaries for their learners. So if the parent want to go buy extra stationery, it's also his or her contributions toward education. But all learners are being covered through the ministry's fund. All the learners have been covered through stationaries that have been bought through the Ministry of Education. They send money to the regional the directors, and the regional director's office, they have to distribute those funds to the school account to make sure that each school, they can buy stationery for their learners. It's not mandatory that parents have to go and buy stationery for their children. It's not a policy at all. So we can see that some of the parents came in my office with a list. I know people, some principal are continuously sending lists to parents which is not a mandatory, but if the parents want to buy some exercise book, pencil and other stationery, it's up to him or her to contribute towards the free universal education that we have. But it's not mandatory that if the parent did not buy stationery, that children cannot be accommodated in that school. It's not a policy. So the government of the Republic of Namibia is committed to make sure that each learner is having funds available to cater for those stationery for the needy and also for everyone in this country. So it's not mandatory at all, even though some schools principal are still sending long stationery letters for the parents or lists for the parents to buy stationery. It's not a policy. And we don't have such a policy for the government, for the Ministry of Education. It's not. Therefore, I'm discouraging those principals who are doing that and continuously doing that, sending back learners because the parents could not afford the stationaries. So if the parents could not afford stationery, some of them I send them today back to the Director of Education to be given exemption because it's not mandatory, it's not a policy. So the government has already did its work with a few dollars that we have. And I know this year is a very big improvement. And if there is a complaint elsewhere, I want to hear who is that, what is that school, or which school is that one that is really punishing students because parents could not afford to buy their learners stationaries. It's not a policy at all.
Mm-hmm. And when those parents are encountering such, where would you say they should go? To whom should they go to report such matters? Because we really have situations like that happening. And my question was even going to, when you say that the government has made it available for those who can't afford, I almost about to ask you whether this applies to Commerce Region as well, because this issue is mostly affecting Commerce Region, I think, at least because I'm here and it's been a thing. And those principals, who then holds them accountable? And maybe I'm asking the wrong person, but you must have some information.
No, I can answer that question because I'm just not the governor.
Exactly.
I'm still a deputy secretary for education,
representing
the Swapo party in the whole Republic of Namibia.
Interesting. I'm glad to know that.
And we don't have a policy, and I know most of the school principals are still giving long list of stationery for parents to go and buy while we have money allocated. So if there is a challenge at those schools should go straight to their director of education. If maybe the delay is coming from the Minister of Education, we want to find out where is the delay coming from? Where is the delay? Why is the money not yet deposited into the school account? So they're supposed to be deposited already from the Minister of Education. The ministry deposits straight to the regional director of education in each region, and also the region. It's their responsibility to make sure that they deposited that money to the school account. And the school principal, together with the school management, it's their responsibility to make sure that they go and purchase the learner stationaries. It's not a policy. I don't know where are they taking it. We have been discouraging this all those years, but I can see it's still continuing. So we talk of free and universal education for grade 1 to grade 12. So, but it's not saying the parents could not contribute. They can contribute, but it's not a forceful thing because everything is covered by the government. If the parents want to contribute to meet the government halfway, they are also, that's why we say it's voluntarily contributions. That is what the government the parents could do. But it's not a policy in the Ministry of Education that the school principals, they should send long lists to parents to buy stationery for their kids. It's not existing at all.
Mm.
Yes.
Governor.
It should go across the whole country. I'm not only speaking on behalf of Oshana region, even though I'm Oshana governor here, but now let me speak as a deputy secretary for education representing the Swapo party of Namibia.
Okay.
Yes. And that is the governing party.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Governor, I appreciate that, and I appreciate for you informing me on that. And you're just the right person that we're speaking to, not just as the governor, but yeah. Thank you so much. Your message to teachers, principals, and learners, out there, as well as to parents, as now school, as we begin now an academic year for 2026?
Yes, thank you very much. All of us, we have the responsibility. That's why I'm saying from the beginning, the education is not a want, it's a right. It's prescribed in the constitutions of the Republic of Namibia under Article 20. So it's a right for every Namibian child to attend school. That's why the government has committed and is still busy building schools to make sure that wherever there is an overcrowded classrooms, we have the decongesting plan that already started last year to make sure that the ratio per teacher should return back to 35 learner per one teacher. So therefore, it's our responsibility as parents, as teachers, and as Namibian people to make sure that we send our kids to school, to attend school, and it's our responsibility as a parents and teacher to make sure that we put the children together and also we support our children in their dealings and to make sure that every child is being taken care of and is given quality education. So it's obviously the curriculum is clear. The rules are clear for education from the Minister of Education. We should follow the syllabus. We should follow the content of the lessons, and we should make sure that wherever you find also schools without furnitures, we should talk to the Ministry of Education so that we make sure that our kids are not sitting on the floor. Our kids, we cannot have five kids sharing one table. We should make sure that we use all the necessary funds before they are back to the stationery. To treasury. Mm-hmm. We need to commit all the funds to make sure that our schools are very attractive to our kids, and as parents and as teachers, we should create a conducive environment where our children will feel protected, where teaching and learning will take place in a very conducive manner. It's our responsibility to make sure that our kids are protected. I know there are perpetrators who are about to start. Yeah. We don't want to hear what we've been hearing last year. Our kids have been kidnapped by some the evils. Mm. So it's our responsibility for all of us to make sure that our kids are protected and our schools are protected and our kids are being taken care of from the feet to the, from the shoes, which is the school uniforms, overall, and also to make sure that they got also food to take with them to school. And their parents, they bought also beds for the kids to carry their books. Mm-hmm. And also it's also rainy season. Our children need to be protected from cold. And it's our responsibility, it's our collective responsibility as senior members of this country to make sure that our schools are very attractive to our kids. And we should really give quality education to our children, especially the foundation. Mm-hmm. Should be very, very strong from grade one up to grade four. Mm-hmm. So that is the only way we can be able to yield quality results as far as education is concerned. Mm-hmm.
Governor, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis and sharing
those
insights with us.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. And there you had it from Governor Hophni Ipinge, that is Oshana Region Governor. Now, let's pause right here. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back, and now we'll tell you what's happening in terms of the economic, in terms of economic indicators. Today, $1 is equals to 16 Namibian dollars and 54 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 20 Namibian dollars and 73 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 25 cents. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars 0.09 cents, and one Botswana pula is equals to $1.23. Now, of course, it's Monday. We have resumed already our The Villager e-paper. Did you know that The Villager e-paper comes out tri-weekly? That is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Now, do grab your copy. All you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144 and receive your free dose of social and economic news for free. Yeah. Now, today's headlines cover the following. Namibia savings above half a trillion. Mutete remains a staple crop for Kavango households. Lower domestic slaughter threatens global beef market shares as slaughtering is down by 28.1%. EMAN advocates for local geological and certification services, hoping it will enhance value addition. Diamond production fell monthly and yearly. Namibia reaffirms commitment to protect visitors. 2026 Nedbank WPP series kicks off. I am product. Shapa Lucia, a teacher. Now grab your copy and read up on those headlines and more right in our The Villager e-paper, available every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Remember, all you have to do is send a text message to 081-200-4144. Also, if you're interested in advertising something about your business, your company, with us right here on Eagle FM, we have many platforms where you can advertise your business, whether on radio, The Villager e-paper, Facebook page, where we have a huge number of fellowship, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, all included in one fee. Please dial 083-288-400. I repeat that, 083-288-400. Advertise with us and get as many customers as you can. You get back the money that you invest in it. With that, let's pause right here. Take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we'll be back with news beyond the borders of Namibia. You are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. We'll be also waiting for your call. Should you have an opinion, a contribution, or a question to ask, studio number is 083-288-401. I repeat that again, 083-288-401. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is
actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Of course, as you know, the metric results will be out this evening as from 12 midnight. But for South Africa, that is now we're heading into news beyond the borders. The class of 2025 metric results are out and it has achieved 98% pass. Let's take a listen.
Board individual results are expected to be officially released at 1 o'clock in this hour. Our reporter Neria Tlakotsa is at the Red Hill School in Morningside ahead of the release of the results. Neria, very good afternoon to you. When we spoke in the previous hour, you were with a bunch of pupils who were eagerly awaiting the outcome of their results. How have they fared?
Good afternoon to you, Paul. We are actually now at Trinity House, Rand Park Ridge. You know, everybody was waiting for that 1 p.m. where results would be released. I will tell you that there is excitement here at Trinity House. We're seeing parents, we're seeing the class of 2025 just coming to gather and see their results and see how well, in fact, they have done. I will tell you that here at Trinity House, they did get a 99% pass rate and 99% bachelor's degree passes, essentially meaning that they will have that access to university. We know that earlier this morning, IEB results were released in terms of the percentage. It is lower than last year's one, but it's still relatively high at 98.3. But Mpo, I want to bring the class of 2025 to you just to hear from them their excitement. I must tell you, when we got here, some of them were jumping up and down and, you know, just talking about how they actually achieved what they wanted. I want to start with you, of course, because as soon as I arrived here, you were jumping, saying you got 90% on what? Tell us more about it.
Hi. So I got 94 for history. That's what I was jumping up and down about, because I think specifically just with history, I think you sit there the whole time within your 5 years of high school and you just trying to get something. And I think it's such an achievement when the end of your high school career comes and you finally are able to just get the results that you wanted to. So I think, honestly, after waiting for 2 months, I think I'm all just really excited to just finally get our results.
And where to from here now? Because I know there's people who can go to university. Are you part of the metrics or the class of 2025 that's heading to university?
Yes. In a few weeks, I'm going to be going to Cape Town, to the University of Cape Town. I'll be studying law.
Okay, good luck on that and congratulations. And let's come to you. You are among those who were excited when I arrived. How well did you do and are you proud of yourself?
I'm very proud of myself. I think I did quite well. I'm not really an academic, but I feel like I did really well. And after 2 months of waiting, I'm really proud of myself. I think it was a really, really long high school journey and I'm glad it's finally come to an end, and a good end is that. So yeah, I'm really happy.
Okay. You're also very happy among them. Well, everybody's happy here and you are no exception. Where to from here now that you've passed?
So firstly, I just want to say I'm very happy with my results. I got the 9 distinctions I set out for and that average of above 90, so I'm very happy. I plan to go to the University of Pretoria to study actuarial science, so I'm looking forward to it. And just a quick note, if I could say, I'm so grateful to my parents standing there. They were the biggest support to me and I couldn't have done it without my parents, but of course the school that gave me this opportunity.
Definitely. Congratulations also. And I want to bring in your parents very quickly as the proud parents. Of course, Mom, thank you so much for joining us here on the SABC News Channel. Your daughter's excited on how well she did. How are you feeling as a parent?
I'm so proud of her. She works so hard. Megan is a consistent, hard worker. So even though it's not a surprise, we are just so grateful.
And how hard was it perhaps for her during the year while she was studying and trying to, you know, get the good results that she got today?
Well, she just took it all in stride. She worked very, very hard, as my wife said. Basically, we told her how important academics were, and she took it from there. We didn't have to push her. She did it all herself.
Thank you so much for your time. There you have it, Jumpo. Basically, the pupils here, well, former pupils now, the class of 2025, excited right now about their achievements. We will be, of course, going to other schools just to see how the mood is. Like I had indicated earlier on, the mood here is very good. Everybody's excited. And more than anything, also, people are excited to see each other because they hadn't seen each other in such a long time. And you've heard from the class of 2025. And five themselves saying that from here on they have to go further those studies. They are done with basic education and they're ready to say hello to higher education.
And that is the Independent Examination Board for individual results that is out in South Africa. Again, on the independent release of the 2025 metric result, scenes of jubilation are seen at different schools that is in South Africa. Let's now move on over to other news. Petra East residents are without water, without power and water. Let's take a listen.
Power outages continuing to plague parts of Pretoria in Eastland. That's where electricity was restored on Wednesday after going out on the 26th of December due to a fire at a local substation. But the lights have gone out again, and this time the area is also without water. Watching a small protest that was held in the inner city today is SABC News reporter Nontantla Njingila, who joins us once again for an update. Nontantla, and I understand some of those angry residents there have given a memorandum to the MMC. What's been the MMC's response?
Well, and as we speak, we are with the MMC of Utility Services here in Tshwane, who's going to give us an update as to what really happened inside there. We have seen the residents now, they have left because they did have this conversation with the MMC. But just because we have kept him waiting for far too long, let me quickly rope him in and he'll give us an update. Thank you so much, MMC, for joining us and sorry for keeping you waiting. We have seen that you're with the residents inside, and can you please take us through what really happened?
Yeah, the resident wanted us to give us them the update in terms of the restoration of power in Eastland and Janiman Park. I just wanted to indicate that on the 26th of December 2025, we experienced a power outage in as a result of the goodie spots that have caught fire. As we speak now, the electricity has been restored to all the other areas. And on Friday, I had a meeting with the residents, assuring them that by the 11th of this month, the power will be back. And I'm happy to announce that the power is now back, and the residents are happy that the power is now back. But what they have indicated to us as the residents is that we need to improve our communication, that when we have got power, we need to make sure that we communicate with the resident from time to time, alerting them that when the power is will be back.
MMC, the residents are not happy. I was with them. Some say they have low voltage. What's your take on that?
No, we know that as we have indicated that the power has been restored to all the areas that have been affected by the power outage since the 26th of December last year. But what we're picking up is that here and there might be some single outage, but overall the power is back in those areas.
And what about the water issue? Because they say they also don't have water.
I am aware of the water issues that on Friday, the team from the electricity were repairing the electrical outage in that area. They accidentally damaged the pipe. But as we speak now, the pipe has already been restored. The water will be trickling and flowing to the residents now.
Did you accept their memorandum? Because we heard that they also want to see the executive mayor, which is Dr. Nasipi Moyo.
No, we have accepted the memorandum. They are raising a number of service delivery issues, not only electricity. But the mayor's office have confirmed that they have set up a date to talk to the communities on the 23rd of this month.
Thank you so much, MMC, for joining us. There you have it, Ayanda. The residents have met with the MMC, and he did assure us that the electricity has been restored in East Lane. But now the residents have left. We would have loved to hear from them as to did they appreciate the MMC's feedback or not. But for now, it looks like everything is okay in East Lane. We don't know. We'll hear from the residents once we get in touch with them, and also we hear that the mayor's office did set a date for the 23rd of January because the residents wanted to see the mayor herself.
And now let's switch over to Zambia. The government of Zambia has issued a warning over market violence.
At the moment, what I can basically say is to all Zambians, particularly those who are operating at bus stations and markets, from the time the president took office, he has categorically stated time and again to say trading areas, bus stations or public places should be devoid of violence. There should be no violence in such places or any other place. He went to an extent of indicating to say no cadre should be allowed to take prominence or abuse other colleagues in these places that I've mentioned. So I strongly condemn the violence that happened. No Zambian should do such a thing, going against what the president has been saying.
Meanwhile, Kwamba Energy CEO discusses OPEC's challenges in achieving market equilibrium with Venezuela. But before we move on to that news, let's first look at Nigeria shines over Algeria as it heads to AFCON semifinals.
The match between Egypt and Cote d'Ivoire had all the hallmarks of history and ambition, and it lived up to that billing. But it did not end according to how the pundits had predicted it. Egypt got into the score sheet in the fourth minute through Omar Marmoush before Rami Rabia added another one at the half-hour mark. Cote d'Ivoire hit back just before the break when Ahmed Abu Fatou put into his own net. But soon after the interval, the Pharaohs got a third one through talisman Mohamed Salah in another devastating encounter. Guela Du answered back for the defending champions in the 72nd minute, but Egypt held on to secure a historic 3-2 victory.
So it was a very tough game for sure. You play against an opponent, most of them play in Europe. They won it last time in their country. And I told them also that you guys won it last time in your country. There is no better feeling in your life you would have like same they had last time. You play against a champion, so they defend as a champion. They dominate most of the games, and we managed to go through because I think we gave it all, and we fight with our heart and our soul in the field. And I'm glad that we managed an end-to-end.
Earlier in the evening, three-time winners Nigeria defeated 2019 champions Algeria by 2-0. The Super Eagles' preparations for this match had been overshadowed by demands of unpaid winning match bonuses for their competition. But after a last-minute intervention, the players agreed to play and turn their quarterfinal match against Algeria into a statement of intent. After a goalless first half, star forward Victor Osimhen opened the scoring for Nigeria before Akor Adams put the advantage beyond Algeria's reach in a match overshadowed by players' scuffle at the final whistle.
I mean, first of all, I want to say a very big congratulations to the whole team for the kind of performance they put against a very very good team like Algeria and the kind of quality player they possesses. And for me, I just did my job. I tried to fight for the team. I tried to get goals or assists, and I'm happy both works for me today. But I don't want to take the glory later on. I think the whole squad deserve the hype, deserve the praise. So I congratulate the whole team for the win.
The implication of Cote d'Ivoire's defeat by Egypt in the quarterfinals means that the defending champions have now officially surrendered their title and that there will be a new winner of this year's Africa Cup of Nations. Egypt, the record champions of this competition, will now meet Senegal in the first quarterfinals, while Nigeria have set themselves up against hosts and Africa's top-ranked side Morocco in the second semi-final. Sadiq Shaban, CGTN in Rabat, Morocco.
And now Sadiq is live for us from Rabat for more details on this tournament. So Sadiq, the semi-final spots have now been filled. What do you make of the last quarter-final match between Egypt and Cote d'Ivoire?
It appears that the Africa Cup of Nations has no sense of humor to its former champions, because the defending champions have now been kicked out. Now, football history here has not been very kind to the holders of this title. Egypt lost that title in 2010. They won it in 2010. 2 years later, they lost it to Zambia, who in turn lost it to Nigeria in 2013. In 2015, Cote d'Ivoire took it over from Nigeria, and then in 2017, Cameroon get crushed into the party and claimed the title. 2 years later, in Egypt in 2019, Algeria took over from the former champions, and then in 2021, again, Senegal took over.
Meanwhile, construction gets underway in Ethiopia on Africa's biggest airport.
Construction has begun in the town of Bishoftu on what Ethiopia says will be Africa's biggest airport. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed laid a ceremonial plaque on Saturday, marking the start of work at the site, located 45 kilometres southeast of the capital, Addis Ababa. When it reaches its full capacity in 2030, the travel hub will be able to handle some 110 million passengers a year. At an expected cost of $12.5 billion, the airport will feature four runways and have parking facilities for up to 270 aircraft. That's more than four times the capacity of Ethiopia's current main airport, Bole, which can handle up to 25 million passengers annually, but is expected to reach saturation within 3 years. In a post on X, Abiy said this multi-airport strategy aims to future-proof Ethiopia's role as Africa's leading air transport gateway. He added that it will strengthen Ethiopian Airlines' global competitiveness, enhance African connectivity, and expand trade and tourism corridors. Funding sources for the Bishoftu hub include the national carrier, international financiers, and the African Development Bank.
Meanwhile, China and Lesotho are set to strengthen exchanges and advance cooperation. A very good move from China, considering that a high tariff was imposed by the U.S. on Lesotho, and Lesotho would produce levy jeans to the U.S. So China is stepping in. Let's take a listen.
The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi is in Lesotho. What's the latest on his visit this hour?
Omar, here, the meetings literally just ended here at the State House. They actually just walked out as I went live to you. There has been a official statement that has been published at the moment, and I have just received it, but I literally have not been able to go through it. But what I did manage to get is that Foreign Minister Letuane Makwajane, who met with Foreign Minister Wang Yi, he said and he emphasized in an interview for us that this engagement was extremely important for Lesotho. He said that discussions went well beyond diplomacy, looking at how sectors can benefit from the relationship, particularly agriculture, infrastructure, skills, and transfer of job creation. So we'll be very interested to see what this communique that I have now in my hands, to see exactly what are the deliberations. But it's believed that now the delegation will go to dinner at a restaurant very close to this state house, Mahia.
Right, and Julie, tell us more about this trip. What's the significance of the foreign minister's trip to Lesotho? And also, how would you describe the ties between China and Lesotho?
Well, it really matters because the partnership with China has been monumental for Lesotho. China has delivered some of the country's most visible infrastructure, actually the state house where I am at now, the Maseru District Hospital, upgrades to the international airport, 91 kilometers of major highways, and national library. So, and as well as parliament. So this is an important meeting to be held. But what I believe is the difference with this visit is that it is a next phase and it is all about cooperation, and it will translate into long-term economic benefits, especially in agriculture, skills, development, and jobs. And obviously with the broader meeting that they had in the China and Lesotho that they had with the FOCAC in 24, this obviously just strengthens the development further, and we will be following closely and to find out exactly what was discussed at this state house today.
All right, Julie, thank you very much for those updates. Julie Shire there in Maseru, Lesotho.
Still on news beyond the borders, and now let's take a listen to Kammer, Energy CEO, discussing OPEC's challenges in achieving market equilibrium with Venezuela.
The U.S. government engaging American oil companies to potentially expand the Venezuelan market and divert oil from there to America. How could this new supply influence global oil prices and challenge OPEC's established role in setting those prices?
Well, the politics of Venezuela are very tricky, so we'll have to see how quickly are U.S. companies actually active there, how quickly does Venezuelan production rise, sanctions are eased or withdrawn or whatever. I think there'll be, in that case, an immediate boost to Venezuelan production, but not a large one, perhaps a few hundred thousand barrels per day. The question really is over the longer term, 3 to 4 years, is there really sustained investment into Venezuela so production could rise by perhaps 2 million barrels per day? That would really be the challenge for OPEC. Venezuela, of course, is an OPEC country, but it's not banned by production limits right now. If Venezuelan production is rising, at some point OPEC will have to have a tough conversation about how far that goes.
And you just touched on the fact that Venezuela's oil production has been hit by sanctions, it's been mismanaged, and there's been a lack of investment. So has this put pressure on GCC producers, and is it likely to put any on?
Venezuelan oil, their heavy oil, was particularly supplying the U.S., that, of course, has mostly gone away in this period of sanctions. Middle Eastern countries, and particularly Iraq and Saudi Arabia, have been sending their heavier oils to the U.S. instead. If Venezuelan oil comes back in a big way, then that will displace the Middle Eastern oil, and that will have to go somewhere else. So there's all a kind of shuffling around a barrel. That is perhaps a secondary thing. You know, the more important thing is what pressure does it put on the overall oil price. I don't think a few hundred thousand barrels per day of Venezuelan oil make much difference. But if you talk about 1 or 2 million over a period of time, then yes, that definitely means a period of lower oil prices for longer.
Bearing in mind potential expanded U.S. oil production from Venezuela, non-OPEC countries supplying oil, and also evolving demand in Asia, how sustainable is OPEC's role in price stability, and are GCC members likely to have to rethink their strategies amongst these shifting geopolitical trends?
I think they're always was a process of rethinking was coming this year and next year, which is really to say, okay, we'll increase production first, then we'll have a big rethink about everybody's production targets and reset them. Some people will go up, some will come down, but there'll be a more logical set of targets for everybody. Now, Venezuela somehow will have, we have to be fitted into that depending where it's going. So OPEC's role of price management and supply management continues very much. But yes, this is an additional complication for them to think about.
Meanwhile, protests have erupted across the U.S. in response to recent ICE shootings.
Out for good! Immigration and civil rights groups mobilizing across the U.S. On Saturday, more than 100 gathering in front of the White House in the cold and rain to speak out against the Trump administration's immigration enforcement operation.
Frightening. We deserve to live peacefully, safely, without being frightened.
This rally in Washington, D.C. is one of several protests playing out in places like Philadelphia, Austin, Texas, and Durham, North Carolina. The group Indivisible organizing hundreds of ICE Out for Good rallies and vigils after three people were shot by federal immigration agents.
Horrifying, and we can't allow it. We have to stand up.
On Wednesday, 37-year-old Renee Good was killed when an Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent opened fire on her SUV as the Department of Homeland Security continues enforcement operations in Minneapolis. Then Thursday, in Portland, Oregon, a man and woman were shot by a federal immigration agent. After the shootings, President Trump defended the officers and the FBI's decision to withhold evidence from Minnesota state investigators.
Well, normally I would, but they're crooked officials. I mean, Minneapolis and Minnesota, what a beautiful place, but it's being destroyed.
For days, hundreds of protesters have gathered in front of federal buildings in Portland. And while a memorial grows in Minneapolis for Renee Good, tensions rising between activists and federal agents. Friday evening, Minnesota state troopers were called in after more than 1,000 marched through the streets and surrounded a hotel. City officials say 29 people were arrested.
We are a safe city. We will not counter Donald Trump's chaos with our own brand of chaos here. We in Minneapolis are going to do this right.
And Saturday, several Minnesota Democrats accused the Trump administration of breaking the law after they were escorted out of an ICE detention facility.
What happened today is a blatant attempt to obstruct members of Congress from doing their oversight duty.
And as these protests continue across the U.S., local officials in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Portland, Oregon are continuing their call urging demonstrators to remain calm. Walter Moore, CGTN, Washington.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Loisa Shimi as she brings you news in our Oshiwambo broadcasting. Of course, do stay tuned for the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 and the Business Economic segment that talks about business-related aspects. If you're a business person or perhaps interested in venturing into a business, make sure you don't miss it. It's an hour that keeps you well-informed, well-engaged, well-educated on business-related aspect, hosted by my colleague David Shombe. Of course, that is from 1800 hours. Now, from Indafa, happy Jojo, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place. That is from 1300 hours to 1430, right here on your only number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. Stay tuned for other programs.